Davidson, a member of the Board of Education for the City of Middletown. Hello, Barbara.
Hi.
Let's start from the beginning. Could you tell me about your background? When did your family come to Middletown? Why? Where did they come from?
Both my parents came from Florida around 1922. My daddy, 1925, I think, my mother. And what was the second part? Why did they settle here? Both of their parents, well, no, my mother's parents settled here for better job opportunities, and my daddy came for the same purpose, to seek, you know, better employment in Florida.
What type of employment opportunities were available to people at that time? Black people, that is.
Most factory jobs, but not factory like machinery. It was a mill, bone mill in Portland. My father was employed at, and I think that's where almost everyone started off, the newcomers to Middletown.
So that's how most people earn their living.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of social activities did you participate in?
My parents, being both religious, the social life was around their religious beliefs. So therefore, we come from a very strict religious family, Pentecostal holiness. So therefore, that was the social life, church affairs.
Were there any activities that were restricted to you because of your race?
My parents, no. Again, I say their activities were around the church. For me, no, there wasn't any restrictive activities.
Now, your family settled in Middletown or Cromwell?
After my father and mother married, they settled in Cromwell. They lived in Middletown, both of them, prior to this, and they bought a home. Oh, some 47 years ago in Cromwell.
So you attended school in Cromwell?
Cromwell.
What was school life like for a black child at that time? How many black students were in the school system?
In Cromwell, at the time I was growing up, I started school in about early 40s or 40, somewhere around there. No, early 40s. There was only 3 families in Cromwell. So I went through the entire system with maybe 3 people in the school, excluding my own family.
Were you treated differently, or did you ever realize that you were being treated differently because you were black?
Not really. There were some racial incidents during my early school years, but it was because I was black, but it didn't make that great of impact on me at that time.
When was the impact made?
After graduation and seeking employment.
Seeking employment. Could you expound on that? What happened? Give us an example.
Well, in high school, I did take a business course, and there's incidents like the blacks in business courses where they weren't given jobs like the whites were. They immediately went from high school right to employment, we had a small career opportunity office in the school, and I don't know of one black who ever got a job from that department. So that was a racial exclusionary means for black students. There was no black in Middletown. I graduated in 1955 in any clerical, secretarial positions. So therefore, we had to go to Hartford if we wanted to seek employment in that area.
So did you go to Hartford?
Yes, I did.
Did you find employment
there? Yes, I did.
It was impossible to find employment in Middletown.
Right.
What did you work? What company did you work for?
In Hartford, Travelers Insurance. You chose the largest company for better job opportunities. The smaller companies did not. I did have a job after school one year around the Christmas holidays as a salesperson, but there weren't any blacks working like locally in department stores or anything like that, to my knowledge.
After Travelers Insurance, you came to Westmont?
No, I had a job in Deep River at a factory in the shipping department as a secretary, and then I came to Westmont.
Okay. I'd like to talk about Westmont a little later, but before that, could you tell me about the level of political activity while you were growing up?
I really don't know that much about it because I really didn't become involved to much later, you know, like only 10 years ago.
Well, what happened to you? How did you become politically involved with Middletown Affairs?
Well, I started off on a committee, anti-poverty committee. It's called CHEM now. And I was just on the board of directors. And I saw a need for Middletown to grow, the black population in Middletown grow, and I thought I could serve best in a capacity of doing service to the black community. And that's how I started. I got an interest in by doing this type thing, and it just led from one thing to another.
What other activities have you been involved in within the political arena?
Other than the Board of Education?
Yes.
No. Not political.
Not political.
Civic.
Civic.
Just plain civic.
Well, yeah. As far as civic associations.
Well, I said the CHGM, mm-hmm. Long Lanes Auxiliary. You know, I took a child home, one of the children. There was girls then, all girls. And I would be like a big sister to one of the girls there. And I enjoyed working there because at that point, there wasn't any blacks at Long Lane, so there was a need for someone to go there and help the girls with their hair problems or any other problems because the whites were not trained in any of these areas, and the black kids really suffered. And let me see, the NAACP I was active in, both on West Lane campus and in the city. I served on different interracial women's groups, you know, doing service to the community. In the religious aspect, I was very much involved with the youth groups in the churches, and much involved in summer Bible school, and I sang in the church choir for many years.
Well, how did you become involved with the Board of Education?
Well, when I first served in a civic group, I became very depressed at the lack of involvement or commitment that the people, that is the white segment in Middletown, they weren't totally getting involved with different things, and it was very frustrating to sit on this table and discuss the problems that, you know, are in Middletown, such as housing or education or something like that. And I just got up frustrated and I quit everything for a period of about 5 years. And then I was asked by David Cooper, who was very active in the Democratic Party at that time, to serve out a term of a woman who moved out of town on the Board of Education. So I agreed to this. And it was about April of 1 year, I think it was 1970. And I served out that term, and it just happened that I agreed to run for the next election, and that's how I became involved on the board.
So what is your current position within the board?
Right now I'm the Vice President of the Board of Education.
Yeah, Vice President of the Board of Education. How many members?
Nine.
There are nine members. Mm-hmm. And of those nine members, how many are black?
One, myself.
Yourself, and the rest are white.
Yes.
Could you tell me about the National School Board Association?
Okay. Locally, we are members of the State School Board of Education, which is Connecticut Association of Boards of Education, which I will call CABE. And CABE's parent group is the National Board of Education. I'm on both of the board of directors, state and nationally. And what it is, it's a national organization which disseminates information to Washington in order to propose bills and other legislative things for public education.
Okay, so there's a meeting annually of every member. Now, could you explain to me, is there a member from every state, or how is this broken down?
Okay, every state has two delegates chosen from their state associations. In any given state which has over 100,000 additional children or pupils, you receive one more delegate. So there's some states that have as many as four delegates representing to the national.
How many delegates is Connecticut?
Connecticut only has two.
Only has two. Now, at the National Association meetings, wherever they're held, how many black representatives are there?
At its maximum, nine.
There are nine black representatives?
Yes.
So what you're saying is nine delegates represent all the black students?
You're absolutely right, in the public schools.
How does this reflect as far as legislation as far as legislation concerning the problems that black students may have within the various school systems throughout the United States?
Well,
what types of positions do you have? What is your power? What leverage can you use?
Our power base with national?
Yes.
Since there it runs about 122 to 150 delegates on the floor at one time, and maximum nine on any given policy or resolution, you can see that there is not that much impact from a black delegate. The only school system that has majority blacks as their delegates would be Washington, D.C. So if there is anything that is really pertinent to black children in the United States, it very seldom will pass on the floor of the delegate assembly, in that there's not that much backing, seeing there's nine people on the floor.
Well, could you tell me if it is for that reason the National Caucus of Black School Board Members was established?
Yes. They needed... That was one of the reasons. The other reason is there's so many problems that crop up from a board of education that you really, you can say it is a black problem, and you couldn't find the solution with the national. The national, by the way, has a lot of publications and different materials helping school board members to better themselves. And the black population of the delegates felt that there was a need for dissemination of information to each other about particular problems, sort of a bank for hiring administrators and teachers. And by in this, we could get a better feel locally on the boards of education if we want to recruit either administrator or teacher. So they felt it very necessary. And I agree, too, that there should be a place where a black school board member could go to seek the same things that national offers.
When was this black caucus established?
It's prior to my time on the board. I would say that it's maybe 7 years old, but it's only been recognized as a body of national in the past 2 years.
Could you explain to me what are some of the objectives of this black caucus?
Better understanding and better activities for the black child in public education. That's a very broad view of it.
Well, what programs have you instituted as a black caucus? What proposals have you made?
What was instituted from the black caucus would be a branch of national, which they call human relations. that deals with particular problems with minorities in school systems. And the Black Caucus is not funded from the national. By the way, we pay dues and fund our own self. But the Human Relations Office is a part of the national.
Have you encountered any animosity on the part of your counterparts?
Locally?
Locally, nationally.
Locally, my counterparts are unaware of the Black Caucus. They don't get involved that much either with state or national things. Statewide, we have a very good relationship with the caucus on the K Board of Directors.
And as well as
nationally, there's resentment towards the Black Caucus because they felt that there was no need for a group to branch off from the National School Board Association. However, I think that that's being resolved. It's still a ticklish subject.
Do you think that nationally they fear the Black Caucus?
Fear in a very different sort of way. They don't like the bad publicity if the Black Caucus ever did anything, quote, radical, unquote.
Has there been any bad publicity?
At one point, during one of the national conventions, the Black Caucus did walk out on an issue being raised that was pertinent to the Black cause across the country, and that was they wanted to unseat one of the executive members, and they proposed a resolution that would do this.
What?
They did not succeed.
They did not succeed. Could you tell me something? What is your position politically? Educationally, as far as busing is concerned?
I guess I have to speak to it in two ways. Locally, I am for busing, only because 79 to 80% of our children are bused. In the Middletown area, if we didn't have busing, you would not get a very good cross-section of children in varying schools. And in that our Black children are predominantly in the inner part of the city, and our very new modern schools are on the outer perimeters of the city, you would have, if we chose to have neighborhood school settings, we would have very, very high percentage Black schools. So I believe personally that a child should have a cross-section of children, be it economic or ethnic, within the student body for them to get the broadest education possible. As I feel the same way about teachers, too, this is one of the ticklish spots with my Democratic Party about recruiting teachers in Middletown. Basically, they feel the community endorsed us to serve them, and we should reciprocate by hiring the community which elected us to office. And I agree with this in principle. However, I don't think you would get a broad cross-section educationally and just hiring local teachers. I think that a child should be exposed to urban thinking, rural thinking, a teacher with extensive travel experience, whatever. So, therefore, I'm off the busing subject. But anyhow, nationally, I guess I'm not opposed to busing for a means of desegregation. However, it's really pathetic that a community cannot be totally Black with totally good educational facilities for the child. So I guess what I'm saying is, no, I am not I mean, yes, I am for busing.
Do you see busing as a political attempt to polarize though that which was or those who were liberals?
No.
So you don't see a polarization at all? Or do you think that busing has caused more or caused more damage than it's done good? Or do you think it's too early to say we'll have to wait a few years? Do you think there's not a substantial amount of cooperation? What do you perceive the position of the parent? Could you elaborate on all of this?
Well, the thing that sticks out most readily in my mind is Boston's busing situation. And I feel that if the parents would be more understanding and not display the bigotry that they have displayed these past years, and just let the kids be educated, I don't think we would have had the problems we have. But in most situations, and I could go back to Middletown, it's the parents who cause the most confusion in any situation. And getting wrapped up in my own thoughts, I forgot the ending of your question. But I believe that the parents should be placed back on the parents, because I think they're the ones who are out there stoning and throwing rocks and disrupting the entire system. I think if you left the children alone, and you know, Boston has quite a large population of blacks, and I think if it could be arranged so that there was equalization of the distribution of race, I think everything would work itself out rather than the parents trying to run the school systems.
Do you have a time limit, or do you see a time limit?
No, I don't. I see it getting worse than better.
You see it getting worse than better, but you still feel that students should be bused?
Yes.
But when will the worst begin to appear, as if it's...
I can't predict that, but I just have a gut reaction that black days are over. And
by that, what do you mean?
Fair treatment to blacks.
Fair treatment to blacks.
Or the liberal aspect of it, you know, going all out for being liberal towards the minorities. I see this as being over.
Over permanently or for a short period of time? Do you see it as a cycle?
Until the economy factor rises, mm-hmm. I can't see any change with people's feelings, because the money situation would dominate anyone's ideas or ideals. Mm-hmm. That's a personal view.
Earlier you mentioned teachers in the area. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I am, there are approximately 387 teachers, secondary, middle, elementary,
yeah,
school teachers within the system. Of those 387, I believe no more than 30 are black.
I think there's 28.
28. What is being done to increase this number? Will this number increase? If so, what will be your impact? Influence on this problem?
What is being done? We do have a recruitment policy on the Board of Education where money is allotted to go to predominantly black colleges to seek teachers to teach in our system. Although that line item in the budget is decreasing, the program is still going on. But we are getting fewer and fewer teachers who want to come to Middletown. as long as I'm on the board, I would see to it that this is kept as it is or stepped up. If we have, I know we have a money crunch, but I think it's still necessary to recruit minorities in Middletown. There's a great need for this. I will do everything I can to see it, because I think that both white and black children, parents, and the administration will benefit from having a different view brought into the classroom at all levels.
Well, aside from the teachers, I believe there are two administrators, one vice principal and one black principal.
Yes.
Will that number increase?
There's not a great turnover nowadays, again, due to economic conditions. But if there is an interest shown, I believe that that will increase.
How is your position received by the eight members on the board?
It's difficult for me to evaluate my position in another person's view. Like any group where you are the one minority, your cohorts believe that you know every answer to any minority problem. I guess that shows how they think. But I think they see me as another board member, but with a view that I'm supposed to be some authority about any black thing.
You have all the answers, no matter what the situation may be.
Right.
Now, the way it seems, you have one black vice principal, you have one black principal, there's a black member of the Board of Education, there may be one or two black teachers in every school. Do you see this as an attempt on the part of the school system to say, we do have black teachers, and just keep it at that, an attempt, or to have this perceived as tokenism? Do you perceive this as tokenism? That's what my question is.
Well, there's a number of things that we must comply with, and the one that's most important, as long as we are receiving state and federal funds, we must maintain the presence of minorities within the system. So I wouldn't call it token, I would call it very necessary to have funding coming in. With myself on the board, I believe I am the third elected official on the Board of Education in the past, say, 10 years. And I'm the third also that was ever elected in Middletown. I said
when
that being redundant.
The third,
but the third Board of Education member.
The third black member or just the third member?
Black member.
The third member in sequence? So that there never has been more than one black member.
And it was only here.
At one time.
Yes. Right.
So
the first one being Dr. Bridgeford, mm-hmm. who moved out of town, and Ernestine Brown replaced him. And she moved out of town, and I replaced her.
Ernestine Brown. So that's what I'm trying to say. As long as they receive these funds, they will comply.
Now, the funds have nothing to do with the school board members.
But there is...
But the funds have a lot to do with the teachers.
Right. But there is an image that one sets.
You would have to separate the board from the school. Mm-hmm. Because the board does not have to have one black person on it. We receive no funds. There's nothing forcing anybody to put a black on that school board. But for the school, if any Joe Smo community person wants to call the EEO and report that Middletown is receiving funds with a pupil population, minority pupil population of over 15%, and has not attempted to hire any teachers, then we would be investigated, and our funds possibly, more than likely, would be withdrawn from the city.
So are you, by saying that there is no direct influence to the Board of Education as far as having a black member, that your position, or you were elected or you were asked to assume this position just because you're Barbara Davidson, someone who is aware of the community and its problems, or is there a correlation with
the funding?
Yes.
No. I don't know how Dr. Bridgeford got on the board initially.
No, excuse me. When did he assume his position?
I've been on 5 years. Mm-hmm. Ernestine had about 2, 7. I would say 8 to 10 years ago.
So we could say that he assumed his position during the vanguard of black awareness and white liberalism?
Let us go back a little bit. As I was saying, I don't know how or who asked Dr. Bridgeford to be on the board. But that's a purely political thing. The the Democratic Town Committee, sometime before August, you are asked to be on a spot or slot within that slate. I think it's 22 openings. You say yes or no, and the town committee approves you, and you run for election, and you're either elected or not. But it has nothing to do with, the school system per se. It's the political wheels who choose you.
But wouldn't you say that?
Let me follow that through. I don't know. I never talked to Dr. Bridgeford about how he got there, who asked him. But a door was open for a minority on the slate. And when he left town, another one slid in. And when she left town, I slid in. And we try to keep that
door open. But that door is always open for one person. Or is that door widening, or is it getting narrow?
Well, since Bridgeford to me, there's only one door.
One door. So it's stationary, let's say.
It seems so. But now this last term, I was informed that the door had closed.
Oh, really?
And that I was in jeopardy of maintaining that slot. And it was only through the 5 members on the town committee and my black contingency that I maintain my position. I have a fairly good backing locally, so if on any given election year that my party wants to unseat me or put someone else in my place, my backing is pretty strong and pretty regular. Again, we go back to the problem of the Democrats' request that we hire local teachers before we go out of the area. I disagree with this entirely. As I said before, I think that the children would be cheated to just have local people teaching them. I think that they need all the experience and all the different experiences that teachers have had or administrators have had outside the community to broaden their horizons. So therefore, I tend not to keep a policy that we are only to hire Middletown people. That has been a very sore spot with my philosophy has been a very sore spot with the Democrats, and this is why it affects my position every time election rolls around. And it was very strong this year in that the entire nominating committee questioned me for a period of 2 hours and 15 minutes about my philosophies on education, my differences in my voting practices, or a number of issues. And they were going to make the decision if I should be on the slot or not. And I understand that they had promised it to another person. And it was only the night before nominations for the slate that I found out that I would be running with the Democratic Party. This has happened the past two elections.
So would you agree then that the Board of Education, I mean, the political impact overshadows, let's say, the educational?
Many instances. Well, it's clear to me at the local level, but I see it national, too. We could go back to the delegate assembly at the national convention, and you have a state such as Arizona or New Mexico that has a very high Chicano
population
or whatever the different ethnic groupings are, and there are none representing them on the board as a delegate from their state.
So the political influence is great.
Yes.
Okay. Aside from being a member of the Board of Education, you're the secretary for the president of Western University, is that correct?
One of his, yes.
One of his secretaries. When did you assume that position?
Well, 7 years ago.
7 years ago, you became his secretary. How long have you been an employee of the university?
15 years.
15 years. So what, how did you begin? What was your initial position?
I began with exposure to Westland as a clerk helping a professor write a book. I did his clerical duties. And while I was there, I could go back a little further than that to tell you an interesting story on that too. It was after I left a factory in Deep River, for personal reasons, I did resign, and I went to collect unemployment compensation. And the requirement then was you had to visit two places a week to seek employment in order to get your employment check. Okay, I knew in Middletown, with my experience, then it was 7 years, background as a secretary, and they didn't have a black secretary, nor a clerk, nor a file clerk in Middletown, so I knew that my chances for being hired anywhere in my hometown was very unlikely. So I played a little game, which I'll confess to now after all these years. Working in NAACP, the man that I did the research work with at Westland was a history professor, and he was about to write a book. So that's how I met him. That's how I got the job, which started out to be a part-time job, but after it developed into a full-time job. But I actually, knowing my community, could draw a compensation check, go to two places, sometimes three and four a week, knowing I would not get a job, so therefore I was getting a double salary because I banked on my not being hired because I was black, and I made it for a whole year. So anyhow, that is how I first got on campus. And while I was there, I met the dean of the college, who was a very close friend to the professor. And a girl was leaving his office for pregnancy reasons. And he asked me if I was interested, and I said yes, and I went over and was interviewed. And that afternoon, by the time the time it took me to walk from North College to PAC, I had the job, and it was an interesting story that he told me afterwards, because he told the office manager in the dean's office at that time that he was anticipating hiring me, and she said that she had been there about 35 years at that point, and she threw the book across the desk and said that she would not work with a nigger or a Jew. And that was when he decided he would hire me.
What was your initial reaction? I mean, you'd been in Middletown for so many years, you knew that there were no black employees, secretarial in clerical positions. When this man said that he was going to hire you, what was your reaction? You must have been shocked.
No, I wasn't shocked at that point because Wesleyan, even though it is in Middletown, it was a different liberal animal than the rest. So my chances were better. Now, I did have a application in Wesleyan for about a year prior to that. And I was sort of feeling like, well, they're just like the rest of the organizations and institutions in Middletown. They wouldn't hire me. And it was right. They did not, the personal person did not hire me. The dean hired me. Mm-hmm. And it was 6 months after the personnel manager found out that I was hired, which annoyed him. But, you know, he could not resent the dean's
decision to hire.
Right.
What was it like? Tell me about it.
My first years at Wesleyan, it was a trip. To make it short, I came to Wesleyan July 1962, I guess. Or 61, actually. I went in Dean's office in 62. And I came in weighing 123 pounds, and the end of the year I weighed 96. That's how it was.
Pounds.
Yeah, it was. I worked with two women who had been there over, say, 20 years when I got there.
You lost close to 30 pounds.
They were completely complacent in their positions. The women around them, their friends, were very secure. They were all older people. I came there at 25 years old, and I was the youngest one on campus. They didn't like to hire young women at that point because it was an all-boys school. Being young and black, I guess I wasn't a threat. So that's one of the reasons I was hired. But anyhow, the women were very, very, very rude. My first years, there was the silence, there was the heavy load they placed on me, workload, and at that time the dean could not supervise because he was off the entire summer, so I was under the same woman who refused to work with me. And it was difficult because it's very hard to work a desk away from somebody and they tell you absolutely nothing. The jargon was altogether different for me. I was in a business world before. And I didn't know a fraternity from a sorority. The machines were all modern. The Latin terms or the Greek terms for the fraternities was new to me. The whole bag was a very new thing. So it was extremely difficult. And the workload, it was had a lot of pressure to it, and they just dumped a lot of work on me. It was good that I was fast, and I received very good training from travelers, because travelers had sent me to school. I was completely frustrated. I used to go home at night and cry on my family's shoulder and everything. So my brother finally told me, if it works that hard on you, Barbara, just give it up. And I made up my mind to give it up because the pressure was just too great. And I went in the following July to the dean, and I just told him that I just could not hack it, and I was giving it up. And he told me, well, Barb, if you can't do it, then forget it. And I guess it was his words. When someone tells me I can't do anything, that makes me work harder. And I told him, no, I'm not quitting. No, you're out of your mind, you know. And that's why I stayed there.
But it was very extremely tense for you. You wound up
not quiet. After that point. My whole personality changed.
In what way did it change?
Well, as you know me now, I appear to be outgoing. I don't bite my tongue. That whole year, I bit my tongue, and I was very quiet. and I took everything that was given to me. After that point, I gave. I knew that it was a blessing that I had the workload from the women that worked in the place with me, because it forced me to learn the campus inside out. And it forced me to, pay strict attention to what I was doing so I wouldn't make mistakes. So therefore, I learned 3 years into one. So I became very efficient in what I was doing, and it didn't bother me, the pressure that was put on me, because I could run circles because I was so used to doing it for that year. So actually, the women who mistreated me helped me.
What was their reaction to the new barber?
Oh, they adjusted. I felt that they gave me enough problems, and they made me what I was or what I turned out to be. So they adjusted, and I never had any, real problems since then, because as they gave, I didn't take, and things worked out very nice.
Now, while you were the early years, the middle 60s at Wesleyan, you participated in the Wesleyan University Tuskegee Institute exchange program.
Yes.
Now, it was your duty to chaperone the white male students of Wesleyan.
Yes.
Through the South.
Yes.
This was in the 60s.
Yes.
During the change, the vanguard of black awareness, during the time of civil rights, Martin Luther King, etc.
Right.
What was your position as a black woman going into the heart of Southern racism?
My position, I don't know if I can answer my position. It wasn't a duty. I chose to do this for the experience because, being attacked so consistently in the office from the females or from the staff, because some of them were males also, it made me become very close to students, especially like the minority students at Wesleyan, not black, Jewish then.
So there was a Jewish minority
yes.
program.
Yeah. No.
It wasn't a Jewish minority program.
No program. The Jews were in a minority.
Was there a quota system for Jews?
There was an unwritten quota system.
For Jewish students?
Yes. Very few Jewish students. And so I became very close to them, and with their suffrage in their years prior, we formed sort of attachment, and so I did a lot of activities with the students that I chose to do. It wasn't a part of my job. When this Tuskegee Wesleyan exchange started, they needed a chaperone. The deans would not let them go without an adult. So therefore, it was just like a mutual agreement that, the dean relieved me of time to chaperone them, and I was glad for the experience. The first trip down there was indeed an experience, as each one was, but the first one had the greatest impact, because I could honestly tell you I did not know what I was doing and getting myself into it. Like you just said, yes, it was one black woman with five black white males, and that was a shock for the South in those years. And I was unaware, but I learned fast of the position that it placed me in.
This period that she traveled South was, let's say, the end, or it was near the end of what the black codes that still existed. Jim Crow laws, we can still call them that.
Right.
Did you encounter trouble?
I could not eat or go to the bathroom or use any of those facilities on the entire trip down. I got plenty of stairs, but the students, I have to admit, they were wiser than me, and we protected each other. I protected them at Tuskegee. They protected me on the road to Tuskegee. Yes, I saw the white-only signs, and mind you, being born and raised in Connecticut, I was aware of Jim Crow activities, but I had never experienced any. And this was my first experience, and it'd be a lasting one because I experienced it with five white people. And my stupidity or unawareness of going down there in that position.
So you went to a black college in the South. What was the reaction of a black woman with five white students from a northern elitist university?
The reaction from the Tuskegee students?
Yes, or the whites.
Okay.
In Tuskegee, Alabama.
Okay. Now, my trip going all the way down, we usually packed a lunch or something like that so I wouldn't be subjected to not eating. Or if we didn't, the joke that I always made was, if you don't eat, you don't have to use the restrooms, you know, so therefore I didn't have a problem. I felt, by the time I got to, like, Delaware, I could feel what my father had said to me prior to my leaving, and that was, do you know what you're doing? And as bullheaded as I am, I said, yes, of course, you know. But I felt the hostility from the whites on the way down. The only rejection I felt was the not eating. And my first refusal was on one of those trips, which I can't even put into words how it is to feel that when you refuse food, which is a sustenance for life. But anyhow, I felt this superficial inner feeling that it will be okay when I got to Tuskegee, that I'll be with my people. And to tell you the truth, I almost felt more hostility upon arriving on that campus than I did on the trip down. They resented my being down there, not necessarily with the white students, but I was a black northerner coming down there, and that was deep resentment on their part. We stayed down there probably a week and a half to 2 weeks at a time, and it was like into almost the last of the week that people would warm up and chat and talk, and there was a friendly atmosphere.
Where did you stay? Did you stay in a local hotel or motel, or did you stay on campus?
On campus, at an inn. There was an inn right there.
There was an inn on campus. What about the white reaction?
There was very few whites on campus down there.
On campus, but within the city itself, are there whites? Was there publicity?
Yes. This is where the students came in. It was really cute. Majority of times it was unannounced that they had a black chaperone, and I can recall one incident meeting the mayor of Tuskegee, who was white at that time, and the students saved the surprise to last, and the surprise being me. And so they sat all around this large oval table and left one chair open right by the mayor. And as I walked through the door, you know, he had extended his hand to all the students and saying how glad he was to meet each one. And when it got to me, he didn't want to withdraw his hand, but he didn't want to shake mine either. And he was very uneasy throughout the whole interview that the students had with him. And the students knew exactly what they were doing, and they did it purposely. As when we were walking out, they saw fit every time they were in the company of a white southerner to call me, you know, at that point I was Mrs. Brogan, by my name and title, you know, and treat me with just overwhelming politeness to just make a point to them that, you know, there was this harmony between me and the student body. And I can remember the kids right in the middle of the city hall holding the water faucet for me to take a drink, and just every mouth in the workers there, you know, were watching the students, and they just looked at me like I was absolutely nuts, because there wasn't a sign there saying whites only. But you knew doggone well that no blacks were drinking out of that fountain. So that was one of the humorous things that happened. Another one was one of the students that went down with us. He was from West Virginia, I believe. And his father owned a huge resort there on the mountains. And he, too, did not tell his father that I was black. And so when we arrived there, the father was indeed glad to have his son from Wesleyan's group you know, staying at his home, but he was surprised to death to see me, and he had planned this party for our arrival, and it was all white, and they just stared at me all night. You know, it was very uncomfortable for me, but again, the students were very good, and they made me feel comfortable, but he segregated us in sleeping arrangements where he gave me a room that was off from everybody else, but I had the best room because it was beautiful, and it was huge, and it sliding whole wall that looked out onto the mountains. I had a gorgeous view, but it was because he wanted to separate me that I got it.
You did this program for 3 years.
Yes.
Participated in this program. Well, let's move up into history. When did black students begin to come to Wesleyan in larger numbers?
The class of 69, I believe, was the largest.
The largest black class. Now, when was there an incident at Wesleyan as on the part of black students? Was that perpetrated by the class of 69? What I'm referring to is the black takeover of this call.
Was that the first incident?
Was that the first?
I believe so.
Now, prior to this class of 69, how many black students were there?
When I first arrived there in the early 60s, there would be 10 black students, but that would include your Africans. Mm-hmm. So, say maybe 4 or 5 in any given year, black Americans.
Mm-hmm. But the class of 69 that came.
That was, you mean how many was in the class of 69?
Now, the class of 69 came in 1965?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, the class of 69 came in 1965. And how many black students were in that class?
You know, I forgot offhand. I think it was in the teens.
In the teens. But gradually the number did increase.
Yes.
Now, when did the incident, the fist takeover, when did that occur?
I don't know the exact date.
The year.
That's what I mean. I don't know the exact year. Oh, Jesus, maybe 68, 69, or 70, somewhere around there. I'm not sure of the year.
Could you recall what precipitated this takeover?
I think that the blacks on campus wanted to form a group together. You know, to have more identity with the other students, their own fellow students. Even though Wesleyan changed and enrolled a lot of black students, their classes still were very middle class white. The atmosphere was very white middle class, and the students wanted to establish their identity and a role on campus other than the gracious role that was extended by Wesleyan in, you know, enrolling them in the first place. And out of that came, there was a big list of demands, but out of that you started your black study classes, FIS call, that all came from this demonstration.
Now, as a black employee, as a black person, were you ever consulted by the black students? What was your position on their takeover? I guess this leads me to ask you, what is your position on the problems that black students encounter here at Wesleyan?
I felt very close to their feelings because I knew from my own experiences on campus that you can be isolated to a great extent where it hampers your just your being. And